Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Ingrid Bacci, who is an Alexander Technique teacher who lives in I forgot the name of the town. What is it?
It's Cortland Manor.
Cortland Manor. I left that off my list here. Cortland Manor, New York, which is just north of New York City. Ingrid is the author of two books, The Art of Effortless Living and Effortless Pain Relief. And both of those books have been translated into many languages and have been Book of the Month Club selections and have been featured in Oprah's magazine O. And Ingrid is a certified Alexander Technique teacher. And among many other things, she is a cranial sacral practitioner. Would that be the right word?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe that your training has been in the Upledger tradition, would you say?
Yes, I trained and taught with the Upledger Institute.
And we might want to at some point say a little bit about who Upledger is and what he did that was kind of unique. But I wonder if you could start by... Some of the people in our audience will know about cranial sacral work, but won't know much about Alexander. And some people will know about Alexander and not so much about cranial sacral. So could you give us like a 2 or 3 sentence description of each of these two processes?
Sure. I'll do the best I can, Robert. Craniosacral therapy is a very gentle hands-on modality that is both energy-based and anatomically, scientifically based, if I can put it that way, that's used to treat anything from really just about anything in the body, but it's used a lot with neuromuscular, neurological issues, chronic pain, migraines, help a person heal from those issues. It's also used periodically as a form of emotional release work. So the critical piece of that is it's very gentle, hands-on modality. The person is fully dressed when they're working on the table. Sometimes it's interactive and sometimes it's not. Alexander Technique is a teacher-student, involves a teacher-student relationship in which a teacher uses both hands and verbal suggestions, both on a table and off the table in movement, to help the client or the student release what are often subliminal tensions in the body, head, neck, shoulders, legs, and so on. So the goal, actually, in both techniques is to reduce and release the body from tensions that may or may not be causing pain, but are certainly inhibiting freedom of movement and freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm. And before this conversation, you told me that you had already completed your training as an Alexander teacher before you had discovered cranial sacral therapy. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It was about 2 years after you yeah. qualified. So I think from an Alexander point of view, teachers and practitioners of the people who are taking lessons in the technique or teaching it might want to have some idea of what cranial sacral therapy offered you that you couldn't get from the Alexander technique. And then we'll discuss the other way around as well.
Right. Okay. Two things, really. One is that I think most people are aware now, it's much more common knowledge than it used to be, that your body can hold, in the form of deep subliminal tensions, can hold emotions that are suppressed, repressed, that we're conflicted about, and so on. And so one of the things that happened to me in Alexander Technique training was that I got a tremendous amount of release in my body, relief from physical pain, and at the same time, I started feeling a lot of emotions flooding up, and I actually found that craniosacral therapy was very useful for processing that. The other thing that happened to me that actually triggered my immediate involvement with craniosacral therapy was that my jaw started locking up, and the Alexander technique wasn't, I could release tensions throughout my body. I couldn't figure out how to release the jaw, the kind of vice-like sensation that would come into my jaw. And I went to a craniosacral therapist, and she did some specific things that helped release that.
So there was a specific pattern of tension that you were aware of that you found that the Alexander technique couldn't really get to, or couldn't get to in any sort of reasonable amount of time. Would that be a way to phrase that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and so if you can, looking back on that experience with your jaw, can you say what it was that cranial sacral therapy did that lessons in the Alexander technique or working on your own using the Alexander technique couldn't get to?
Sure. And there are a couple of things here that I distinguish one from the other. When in my very first lesson, or in my very first experience with craniosacral therapy, I was put on the table, and unlike in the Alexander technique, you can go into a kind of semi-hypnotic state, if I could put it that way. It's very passive in that sense. Mm-hmm. And what actually happened was that I started having what felt like a flashback to something that I couldn't recognize, that was emotionally very traumatic for me at the time, and started crying. And when I finished crying, the pain in my jaw was done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that is a particular example of what is very familiar in cranial work as emotional release. And what happens is that when a client is able to go into a kind of passive, like dreamlike state, sometimes images, unconscious memories, and so on will flow up, and they're connected to whatever the restriction is. Mm-hmm. So that can be one reason that craniosacral therapy can be particularly useful. Another is that you can have structural problems that are pretty complicated, you know, bones that are really stuck, that have been stuck there for a long, long time, vertebrae that have been out of place for a long, long time, you know, eyes that aren't functioning together, that haven't functioned for a long, long time. So on a structural level, sometimes you need very specific diagnosis and touch to release those things, because sometimes those things are just, it's very hard to access them just directly by working with what one can feel consciously.
Yes, and I'd like to maybe jump in here and say a little bit about some of my experiences. I too encountered the craniosacral sacral work basically right around the time I graduated from an Alexander technique training course. And in fact, Walter Carrington, who was not the director of my course, but was the director of sort of the father of my course, was actually quite intrigued with cranial sacral work and was encouraging some of his students to go and experience it. Mm. I don't know all the details of that. I did go to someone a few times in England, but then I was heading back to Canada and pretty much dropped it. But later on, I was always a bit intrigued by it, and eventually I ended up taking a 5-day training in it, run by the Upliger Institute in Toronto. And I was very impressed with the training. I thought they got across quite a few good ideas very effectively. I found that I could successfully do it. But I also found that bored me, and I was much more interested in receiving it. So I looked around at all the assistant teachers who were all from Toronto, and I looked and picked the one that seemed to have the best use, and started having sessions with her. And over the years, I have found that it's an incredible complement to Alexander work. For me, I would say not as much obviously on an emotional level, but more getting at incredibly deep-rooted and very complex patterns that I suspect, but can't prove had to do with my birth.
Mm-hmm.
Everything mm-hmm. kind of matches a certain sort of delivery situation.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, where a shoulder gets caught up on the way out and so on. Anyway, and what I would say is that what craniosacral can get to that regular Alexander lessons really can't in any practical way are these, as you say, very complex fascial patterns and interconnectedness of one tension with another. And Alexander directions tend to be generally a bit linear, I would say. And many of these patterns are, you could maybe imagine that if you used Alexander directions long enough, they could come undone. But my sense is that, at least for me, I'd have to reincarnate quite a few times before that happened. And I just didn't see the point when there was a much quicker and more direct way at getting at it.
Yeah, you're talking, I think, about what in cranial work is called unwinding.
Yes.
Where the body, the fascial, the complex fascial complexity, the connective tissue and muscular complexity of the body is so incredible. And one of the things that's wonderful about craniosacral therapy is that, unlike a lot of more aggressive therapies, you don't go in and say, well, we'll, you know, pull a shoulder out here and do this there and, you know, pop a vertebra back into place here. Instead, they say, well, it's a way of contacting the tissues, or they say, well, we can feel that there's a restriction here, and it's almost like it's really talking to the tissues, learning to talk to the tissues. Why don't you show me how you need to unwind?
Exactly.
That's a process. So in cranial work, one of the things that's very, very beneficial about it is that they teach you how to assess very quickly where what I would call a primary problem in the body is, and then to address that problem. Now, and it's incredible. Now, the limitation of that, if I can put it that way,
mm-hmm.
is that let's say you find a basic problem, okay, and you address it, and the person unwinds at a certain level. Now, sometimes that unwinding, that correction, is permanent. Sometimes there's a memory or a lesson somewhere learned in that, if there's imagery or conscious awareness of something from the past, that can be permanent and can have a long-term effect. Sometimes it would be great if, how can I put it, sometimes the correction is not permanent, and that's where you have, or is not longer standing, and that's often where you have, you know, what in Alexander technique would be described more like as patterns of use, you know, patterns of ways of holding the body, of moving the body, and so on, that are ingrained, and that it would be really helpful for a person to be able to recognize those and consciously work with them.
Mm-hmm. So I think that there, obviously every person is different in this regard, but I think there are certain kinds of patterns that get in the way that bringing them to your consciousness and learning how to release them using your thinking process, which is pretty much what the Alexander technique is about. There's mm-hmm. certain kinds of patterns where that works really well,
mm-hmm.
but there are also certain kinds of patterns where the technique may work a bit, but is a bit handicapped by the fact that if the patterns are so complex, it's hard to imagine how you could usefully direct yourself out of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's kind of the problem. And I know in my own case, I have become aware during cranial sessions over the last almost 20 years now of very specific tensions that I never noticed before with many years of teaching before that.
Mm-hmm.
And no one
mm-hmm.
ever called them to my attention. And I suspect they were just not they were kind of under the radar in a way of what an Alexander teacher could even maybe even notice in a way that would be useful to change. Does that make sense to you?
I think that's true, and I also think that there's a place of dialogue, if I can put it that way, here. So let me put it this way. When an Alexander technique teacher works with a client, it's mostly on the level of, let's say, conscious, and you pop in if you think I'm not describing this adequately, conscious recognition of tensions and releasing tensions in various parts of the body. So it's pretty much a conscious process, and it looks at the conscious physical awareness, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. So what can happen if a craniosacral therapist is good, if I can put it this way, is that when they put their hands on a certain place in the body, they often put their hands on that because there's a tension, what's called an energy cyst or a blocked place, okay? So that would also be blocked for an Alexander technique teacher. But a good craniosacral therapist will engage you in a dialogue about what does this feel like, and then start making like metaphors, like if it had an emotional quality, what would it be? Do you ever notice this feeling in particular types of situations? So it's like a process of bringing a person's awareness specifically not only to attention in the body, but to how it might exist as a kind of emotional or historical, let's say, holding pattern. And one of the things that I learned through craniosacral therapy as a client, but also as a practitioner, is that when we can begin to, that a craniosacral therapist can, if they can begin to help the client be more conscious of this on a regular basis, then that client can bring in Alexander technique learning at a deeper level. What I mean by that is a lot of times we don't release tensions because we're emotionally committed to them, not logically, consciously committed to them, but we're emotionally committed to them. They're part of the way we hold ourselves in life. So they're all bound up sometimes with fear, with anxiety, with anger, with feeling overburdened, with self-criticism, and so on. So all I'm trying to say here is that when you can bring a sense of an awareness of the emotional quality of that tension into a client's awareness, then they can probably work with it more consciously through Alexander Technique's style of direction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Now, we've talked mainly so far about how cranial work can complement Alexander lessons, but I think we need to discuss the other side of things. How might a craniosacral therapist benefit from having some Alexander lessons?
Okay, that's a great question, and I'm going to say first that, and I'm speaking as a craniosacral therapist who teaches craniosacral therapy to Alexander Technique teachers.
Perfect.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So there's nothing as terrific as in terms of hands-on quality, as an Alexander Technique practitioner who learns craniosacral therapy, because they have just terrific sensitive quality of hands. And one of the things that happens to a lot of an Alexander Technique teacher is taught tremendous self-awareness in putting in themselves and putting their hands on somebody else's body. So they're working continually with releasing any tensions from their own body, and that makes for exquisitely sensitive hands. Most craniosacral therapists are not given that training in self-awareness. So to develop that level of awareness is hugely, it increases your capacity to work with people effectively 100-fold. So mm-hmm. I would really encourage Alexander Technique training for any craniosacral therapist. Another thing, if I could just add this, is sure. that the your classical, you know, when you're trained in Alexander technique, you're very much aware that every part of the body is related to every other part, and that releasing in one place leads to releasing in another place. So you work with your client to enable that whole body awareness process. In craniosacral therapy, that should be a given, but my perception is that it's not taught well enough. So what I mean by that is, again, a craniosacral therapist would benefit from learning more when they're putting their hands on somebody's body, from learning how to actually practice more whole body awareness. And the final thing I'm going to say, which is, you know, the thing that's to me most extraordinary about the Alexander technique is this brilliant basic insight, if I can put it that way, but it's absolutely brilliant, which is that everything is organized around the line of the spine. Duh, you know,
yeah, right.
And everything should lengthen and widen. You know, the spine should lengthen, the area around the spine, the tissues around the spine should widen. So it's kind of like you have a central axis with the head beautifully balanced on top and everything spreading out from that. A nice energy field spreading out from that. Well, you can, when you, if you practice as a craniosacral therapist, having that intention in your hands while you're working with a client, it's, again, it speeds up the process enormously. So those are the three main things that I think are tremendously beneficial from learning some Alexander technique work.
And in regard to that last point about the expansion, lengthening and expanding out, and another way of putting that is the Alexander technique really shows you how you can take up the space in the world that you're entitled to and not
totally.
Scrunch yourself up. I think it was Marjorie Barlow who made that point somewhere. She's a very well-known Alexander teacher, niece of Alexander himself, that most of us go through our lives basically not taking up the space that that is built into us to take up. We squeeze ourselves in various ways. I mean, the most obvious one would be a slump of some sort, but of course over straightening is another kind of a squeezing in, just in a different direction. And that's what we tend as humans and modern society to do a lot, and the technique is really about teaching you how to let go of those restrictions so that you do take up the space you're entitled to, so to speak. And the other thing I would say, another reason why cranial sacral therapists might want to consider having some Alexander lessons is, in a way, a more mundane one, but I don't think so unimportant. If you're a cranial sacral therapist, you spend a lot of time standing or sitting, and often not moving around too much as you're doing that. And the danger could be that you would sort of stiffen up a little bit in yourself to hold a sitting or a standing position. It would be a bit of an occupational hazard, I would think, for anyone who, really any kind of body worker of any kind, but certainly a cranial therapist. And the Alexander technique, if nothing else, would show you how you could stand and sit and be more comfortable and be less prone to getting stiff shoulders or stiff necks or back pain or that sort of thing.
Absolutely, and agreed 100%. And again, you know, I'm lucky in having had my training in Alexander technique, because I just, when I work with students, I integrate that immediately into teaching them. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's too many craniosacral therapists, and not just craniosacral therapists, I mean, massage therapists, occupational therapists, and so on, develop pain because of poor patterns of use. And the Alexander technique is just brilliant in terms of making life a lot easier for you.
And, you know, I think although our topic today has been craniosacral work and Alexander, I think it might be useful to put those two on a kind of a spectrum of modalities to give people a little better sense of how things fit in with each other. To me, and you please chime in with your, you know, your additions or differences on this. To me, the Alexander technique is kind of the king of consciousness methods. I mean, it really is all about becoming aware of what's going on and then using your own mental faculties to change those.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any other method that really compares with the Alexander technique in that regard. I would say that the cranial sacral work, by contrast, is, at least from what I can see, the king of getting at really subtle, hard, elusive, complex patterns and helping you to identify them and release them in a way that probably the Alexander technique couldn't do in any reasonable period of time. And at the other end of the spectrum, sort of if Alexander is in the center in this little diagram and cranial sacral is, let's say, off to the left, off to the right, at the opposite extreme, would be things like Pilates or maybe some kinds of physical therapy or even possibly some fitness activities that are designed to systematically strengthen certain muscles or muscle groups that are so out of balance that all of the Alexander directing in the world isn't really going to get you out of them again in any reasonable time frame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me, those are I personally have benefited enormously from modalities at those two ends of the spectrum. Cranial sacral, let's say, on the left, we're just putting it there arbitrarily. And in my case, Pilates, but Pilates taught by an Alexander teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in my case, some physical therapy, but taught by a very unusual physical therapist and not your sort of normal PT that you might get in a hospital setting or something, or a very specific set of highly targeted exercises. And in some ways is a little bit like Pilates in the thinking behind it. And I found that to be incredibly helpful and helped me to change some structural stuff that's just made a huge difference. And I don't honestly think Alexander would ever have gotten to that, at that for me.
Mm-hmm. I think there are two other disciplines that I've found very, very useful at various points. And one is yoga, specifically Iyengar yoga, because they, again, I think systematic practice of very... Iyengar, by the way, as you probably know, is the most highly disciplined form of hatha yoga practice, tremendously long certification processes, but also very, very specific poses. And the Iyengar yoga has a capacity which I haven't encountered any place else to, if you systematically practice those exercises and get to understand what they're about, to completely repattern the body. And, you know, I'm saying that as somebody, I was born with scoliosis. And my scoliosis improved with the Alexander technique and improved with craniosacral therapy. But once I had those under my belt, the Iyengar yoga made a massive difference, absolutely massive difference, just by systematic practice. And the other thing, the other discipline that I've found very useful as an adjunct in terms of self-awareness, as an adjunct to the Alexander technique, was Feldenkrais work.
Mm-hmm.
Because movement, you know, Feldenkrais movement through awareness or awareness through movement, that work helps you, or helped me in a way that perhaps I had not gotten in my Alexander technique training, which is not saying that it doesn't happen, but made me more aware of specific tensions in very specific parts of my body that I could then work on, specific pelvic tensions that I hadn't accessed through Alexander technique, or specific tensions in, you know, my shoulders or in the right side of my neck, that kind of thing. So That was useful too. But those two adjuncts, they're all, you know, and I think of Alexander technique and craniosacral and things like polarity also share a common perception, which is not only of the body being basically organized around in an expansive way around the central nervous system, but also that the more space, the better. You know?
Yes.
Uh-huh. The more personal space you have, the better. And Iyengar yoga is like this too. So you stretch out maximally in all directions. You learn how to take up maximal space. And that's a physical process, it's an emotional process, it's an awareness process, it's all of these.
Right. So we've covered a lot of modalities today, and
I think we have.
I wonder what the takeaway message would be for someone listening to this. I'll just jump in with mine, which is that if you're working with one of these modalities, you might want to at least explore a couple of the others and see if they can't be of assistance to you. What I've found in general is that a little bit of one of the others often has a huge impact on the one that you're more committed to. So, for example, if you're an Alexander teacher or Alexander student and that's your main way of improving things, a little bit of cranial could go a long way. Or perhaps a little bit of really good Pilates could go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a Pilates instructor, for sure, a little bit of Alexander could make a gigantic difference in how you work. Or if you're a craniosacral therapist, maybe a little bit of Pilates would help you, and vice versa. In other words, all of these complement each other, and most people wouldn't have the time to engage as much in all of them as they would like. But if there's one that you kind of is your main avenue of self-improvement, don't be close-minded, I would say, about trying some of the others and seeing how they fit in. That mm-hmm. would be what I would say to a listener. How would you approach that?
I agree with you totally. I mean, just from personal experience, and also I recommend all the time for clients of mine to do some yoga exercises, or I give them to them, or to, you know, if I'm working primarily with cranial, to go to another teacher for Alexander, or, you know, basically integrating. The other thing that I would say is the same thing that you were saying as a client, I would say to a practitioner. Any practitioner can hugely amplify their skills and their understanding of what they're really working with by exploring a little bit. If you're an Alexander technique teacher, explore craniosacral, explore Pilates, explore yoga. It doesn't mean you have to become, you know, a professional in it, but take some lessons from there, because you can then bring that back not only into how you are with your clients, you know, in your own body, but into what you teach them. And the same for every other discipline. I think it's, you know, it's unfortunate sometimes that, you know, sometimes when techniques are taught, it's taught from the perspective of my technique is king and you don't want to listen to any others. And I think that it's really the other way around. The more we can learn from one another's disciplines, with the idea that they all have some core of wisdom in them, the better we become as practitioners.
Well, I think that would be a perfect note on which to end our conversation. What do you think?
That sounds good, Robert.
So this is Robert Rick over at Body Learning, and my guest has been Ingrid Bacci, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in Cortland Manor, New York, which is just north of New York City. She's the author of two books, both of them translated into many languages, featured in Oprah Magazine and the Book of the Month Club. We'll put a link to Ingrid's website next to this interview so you can learn more about her work. Ingrid, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Robert, for a great conversation.